Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is December 7th, 2012, and the title of today's podcast is You Can Ring My Bell. Now, I've got another guest today, and you may recognize his chocolatey smooth voice from previous SGEM episodes. Say hello, Tony.
Hey, guys. Tony Sipal from Indiana University, and I just want you to know that my birthday is coming up in 8 days.
Ooh. So you've only got 7 more shopping days, listeners.
That's right. That's right. I take personal checks, money orders, and then, you know, whatever else you want to send me would be great.
You know, this is supposed to be a free online access to medical education, not a paid online access to medical education, Tony. So settle down there.
Oh, no, I'm just asking for bribes. Not
oh, okay. Now, we're doing this over Skype because you're in Indiana and I'm in Goderich, Canada. So this is kind of neat. We'll see how the audio quality comes out on this.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Well, today's question revolves around Bell's palsy, and we're going to ask 3 specific things. The first one is steroids, yes or no? Antivirals, yes or no? Or both, steroids and antivirals? So we like to start these podcasts with a case. So, Tony, have you got a case for us today?
Absolutely. Actually, this is a case that I had not too long ago. I was working on the acute care side of the emergency department, and the nurse hands me a chart that says potential acute stroke. And as I look at the demographic data, I notice that it's a 35-year-old female who is otherwise healthy, and symptom onset was when she woke up this morning. So because we are fairly attuned to quick action with folks that may have an acute stroke, I rush over to the bedside with my resident to take a look at this young woman who is in some modest distress. She's nervous and scared that something really bad has happened.
Oh, of course she would. I mean, you know, these people coming in, oh my God, I've stroked.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if I woke up with my face looking like that, I'd be kind of scared too.
But you didn't TPA her, I hope.
Well, I thought about it.
Yeah.
Because you have to think about it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right,
we're keen diagnosticians here, Ken, in Indiana, and so we were able to prevent a potentially harmful intervention.
From a stroke mimicker. Well, why
exactly.
Don't we talk about Bell's palsy then? I don't think we need to teach the whole concept of Bell's palsy other than it was named after Dr. Bell. And I kind of always have a problem with these things named after people, probably because there's no Milne disease. But Bell's palsy is a unilateral facial weakness due to the 7th cranial nerve, correct, Tony?
That is correct.
And it accounts for 60 to 70% of all unilateral facial weaknesses. So when you see someone with facial weakness, you know that more than 50% of the time, it's going to turn out to be a Bell's palsy. And when I looked this up, I found that the incidence, and of course this is always reported in the U.S., is about 30 cases per 100,000. I wish they would have reported it as 3 per 1 million because then I could put my pinky to my face and, you know, mimic Dr. Evil again. But no, 30 cases per 100,000. But you times that by the population of the U.S. at 380 million and you get 114,000 cases of Bell's palsy a year. So we see this. We see this quite often in the eMERGE when they come in. Now, you know, you alluded to how sharp you guys are down there. Whenever I see someone with Bell's palsy or suspect Bell's palsy, I always wonder, you know, stroke, not stroke, whether it's a central lesion or a peripheral lesion, and I always have to look it up. Tony, do you remember how to, you know, how to differentiate that?
Well, unfortunately for me, the big deciding factor is whether or not they can wrinkle their forehead or not. And with Bell's palsy, you should not be able to wrinkle your forehead on the affected side.
You should not.
Wrinkle your forehead, that is potentially a central stroke.
Fascinating. Hey, wait a minute. I've got a great way to remember that. Remember Star Trek? Dr. Spock? He could put up one eyebrow, but not the other one.
So he had Bell's palsy.
Fascinating. So when I see someone with Bell's palsy, I could think, fascinating. Now I can remember that. Thanks, Tony. I appreciate that. So we're going to have 2 Cochrane reviews to review today. Two Cochrane reviews. And the first Cochrane review looks at corticosteroids for Bell's palsy and idiopathic facial paralysis. And this was done by Salinas et al. And published in 2010. And the population they were looking at was adult patients included in 8 trials with close to 1,600 participants. And the intervention was, of course, steroids, and the control was not getting steroids. They had three different outcomes. One was looking at complete motor recovery at 6 months. The next one was, did they have improvement? And then a third one was cosmetic improvement. And so those were the three main outcomes. And when you look at the results from this trial, the first two, did people recover? Well, yeah, they did. They had a risk ratio recovery favoring steroids for complete recovery. Now, Tony, I got a bit confused on this. Risk ratio, can you help me out here?
Yeah, sure thing, Ken. So risk ratio is the same as relative risk. They're just trying to sound smart.
Ah, you see, that's why I had trouble. Yeah, I read risk ratio. I'm like, what? Because I'm more familiar with the other term, of course.
As am I.
Okay, so they're interchangeable. We can, we don't want to confuse the SGM listeners.
Interchangeable.
Okay, great. So risk ratio can be used interchangeably, and it was 0.71, so favoring steroids. Same thing with a significant improvement. So people had a significant reduction in their motor dysfunction. In other words, they improved, and their relative risk reduction was 0.6, correct?
That sounds right.
And then the final thing was cosmesis, and it was not different. So you had more people completely recover, more people improve, and then the cosmetic outcome didn't show significant difference. So it really looks like steroids work for this, doesn't it, Tony?
Absolutely.
So if we were to give a bottom line here, a take-home message, would it be something like, I am Hans.
And I am Franz.
And we are here to pump
you up.
Yes, everybody. I'm sorry we're a bunch of middle-aged guys, but that's Hans and Franz.
That was
saying,
terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Steroids,
unforgivable.
Yes, steroids for Bell's palsy. Steroids for Bell's palsy. And I'll say it a third time. Steroids for Bell's palsy.
Do it.
David Newman did a review on this, didn't he, with Newman. The NNT?
He did.
Newman.
So for our listeners, if you're not familiar with David Newman and his wonderful thennnt.com site, highly, highly recommend this site for some quick answers. And Dave and his cadre of writers have covered Bell's palsy quite well, and in particular, this systematic review that we're discussing now. And if you go to his website and plug this in, you'll see that you get a green light, which means go, and the number needed to treat for benefit is 11 for a full recovery.
Wow, that's great. So 1 in 11 for a full recovery. And we know about 4 out of 5 people get better without treatment. So 80% of people improve with Bell's palsy without treatment. So you're looking at that final 1 person out of 5 and then helping them, right?
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah, well, that's great. Yeah, no, I really like the NNT website, just so I can say Newman.
Newman.
All right, so let's move on to the next question, and that was antivirals, yes or no, for the treatment of Bell's palsy. And for a long time, people have suggested that maybe a cold sore virus, a herpetic lesion, may play some role in Bell's palsy. And it's been researched, and this was another Cochrane review, and this is Lockhart et al. From 2009. And it's antiviral treatment for Bell's palsy or idiopathic facial paralysis. And their population included close to 2,000 adult patients in 7 trials. And they were looking at adding antivirals or no antivirals as the control. And their outcome was looking at incomplete recovery at 1 year. And of course, the motor function and what they refer to as crocodile tears at 1 year. And I guess we could go through all the details, but the bottom line here, Tony, was that it didn't make a difference. Adding antivirals, there was no significant difference in the rate of improvement or partial improvement with antivirals, unfortunately.
Yeah, Ken, that's absolutely correct. And actually, in some of the individual randomized controlled trials, people in the placebo arms did better than those that received antivirals.
Yeah, no, I noticed that too. So if you were randomized into the, yes, I got the antiviral drug, you did worse. Wow. I mean, our job is to do no harm. And you think, wow, I'm going to give something in hopes to treat someone and make them better. And in those single trials, they did worse.
Yep, very interesting. And of course, don't forget the fact that these medications cost money. Depending on which one you prescribe, you may need to take it up to 5 times a day for a prolonged period of time, which can be pretty difficult.
Yeah, no, there's costs involved. Anytime we use some biologically active agent, there could be potential harm. And also there's the financial aspect as well. I mean, these things aren't free.
That's right. It's free in Canada, though, isn't it?
For some people, yes. Drugs are not all covered.
I see.
But the thing I found interesting is, look at these meta-analysis, how they answered these two questions so well. Do you want to comment on that, Tony?
Yeah, I absolutely can. You know, Bell's palsy is a great example of why we need meta-analyses. And as it, turns out, back in the day, because, you and I are kind of old school practitioners now, which is really scary.
Isn't it scary?
But we really didn't know how to treat Bell's palsy. And so if you asked 100 emergency physicians, they'd be split amongst a couple different camps. Some people believe there's really nothing that would benefit, so they wouldn't give folks anything. A fair number would give both steroids and antivirals, and then an equal number would give either or. So some believe steroids were great, and then some believe that antivirals were great. And as far back, or as not so far back as 2004, you can find the first Cochrane review on this topic that included 4 trials and a total N of only 179 patients. And their conclusion is what you would expect. There's not enough randomized controlled trial data to support one particular therapy or another. And since 2004, as evidenced by these two systematic reviews that we talk about today, we have well over 2,000 patients collectively that help us answer this question. So a really nice example of the power of meta-analyses and how they can pull recent randomized controlled trials to give us a definitive answer. And this is just another example, Ken, of a collection of meta-analyses that change practice. And I would also note that these aren't the only meta-analyses on Bell's palsy that come to the same conclusion. So there was one performed and published in JAMA in 2009 and one in BMJ the same year that reached the same conclusion. So the reason why that's important is this isn't just the Cochrane telling you what to do, but this is consistent across numerous authors, numerous well-done publications and recognized journals that make me very comfortable to follow the recommendations of these systematic reviews.
So that's a great shout out for evidence-based medicine there, Tony, on how it can affect and change practice. Now we just got to get it to disseminate it, and hopefully through the SGEM we can do that, because these things have been published in 2009 and 2010. So if you're listening today, make those practice changes if you haven't already, and you'll be cutting that KT window down to 2 to 3 years instead of the typical 10 years. I think that's great. All right, Tony, so to finish up with the antiviral treatment for Bell's palsy, what would be the bottom line in your opinion?
Danger, Will Robinson, do not use.
I like it. I like it a lot, yeah. So no antivirals for Bell's palsy. Thank you. Tony, we're practicing evidence-based medicine here, and we've just reviewed some of the evidence. So let's go back to the case that you presented originally. Can you tell me how that case concluded?
Absolutely. So again, because we are keen diagnosticians here in the United States, as I'm sure you are in Canada, we diagnosed this young, healthy woman with Bell's palsy. Her symptoms started that day, and as long as the symptoms start within 72 hours, and what I do now is I treat these individuals with steroids for 10 days, and I give them follow-up to see a neurologist or a primary care doctor to make sure that they are recovering appropriately.
Wonderful. So you gave her steroids, did not give her antivirals, and arranged appropriate follow-up for her. That's great.
Yep.
All right, well, that concludes this episode of The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. I do have the Keener contest to go through, and I'm happy to announce that it was Sarah Scott. Yes, Sarah Scott from Ottawa, a Canadian, won the Keener contest by correctly defining oligoanalgesia as inadequate pain control. So congratulations, Sarah. And there's a bit of an irony to this, because the Keener question for today It has a little Canadian content to it as well, and it refers to someone from Ottawa. So today's Keener question is, who is the famous Canadian Prime Minister who suffered from Bell's palsy but did not have a complete recovery? Too hard for you Americans? What do you think, Tony?
There's no way an American is getting this one right. I have no idea.
I guess we could throw out the American question.
Don't you guys have presidents in Canada? What is this prime minister thing?
Oh, stop. I could throw out there, how can you remember whether the eyebrow is involved with Bell's palsy, whether they can wrinkle their brow? Fascinating. Let's see if they remember that. That'll be the backup American question.
Yeah, well, yeah, we definitely need an easier question, Ken. You know this.
Okay, so as always, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and of course, be skeptical of anything you are taught, even if you were taught it on the SGEM. Talk to you next week.